How's it going? And welcome to episode 229 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening and or watching. If you're watching us on this beautiful, I'm always making an assumption when I say that for you, Kevin, because of where you're at, but it is an absolute gorgeous day for me in the middle of the country in Indianapolis. It's just like that perfect, like what I was used to in the Bay Area, what I lived in Oakland for like a decade, like that perfect high 70s, low 80s, the sun's not shining too hard. It's just a beautiful day. So I'm expecting that you live that life on the regular. I, on the other hand, enjoy these days that much more because they don't come around every single day. But we got a great show. We only got a couple of fab periods left. So I was tempted to do my recording outside. I don't know how the audio would have come through and if there was a possibility my computer would have overheated. So I decided not to. I am still kind of stuck inside for the next hour and a half with you, which I'm perfectly fine with. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you happen to have one of those really random days where you actually see clouds, let me know.
Well, yeah. Well, I live on the side of the island where I see clouds quite often, and it is a little overcast, but it's absolutely beautiful day. I grew up in the Midwest, and yes, this time of year is amazing. You can still have some, it's still August. There'll still be some really hot days throughout at least the first half of September. But yeah, this is the best time of year in the Midwest when it starts cooling off after the hot summer days. Shorts and hoodie weather. Shorts, hoodie, and flip-flops. Love it, Adam.
But to be fair, I also grew up in New England, and for most of people in New England, and in Boston specifically, it's shorts and hoodie weather all year round. It's like shorts, hoodie. Some reason, nobody's legs in Boston get cold, but you always are required to wear a hoodie, no matter if it's 95 degrees or, you know, -2. And iced coffee all year round as well. So very different lifestyle in the Northeast. All right. Well, we got, as I'm putting together all these news and notes, I'm like, I don't think we have that much time. And like, it just kept coming. Like I just kept adding to it. So we got plenty to consider. How many fab periods left, Kevin? You're always the one that reminds me.
Including this week, we have four. There are 4 weeks of the Major League Baseball season remaining.
So keep that in mind if you happen to have, you know, for whatever reason, you still have triple digits left in your budget in the leagues that you've been active in throughout the course of the season. You know, about time to start spending that money. And we got plenty to talk about for consideration here. So let's get into the players we will not be considering and will be not only considering, but relatively high considerations for dropping altogether. First and foremost, the one that's the most obvious drop, Nathan Eovaldi. He hits the IL with a rotator cuff strain. His season is over for the 2025 season. What kind of replacement value is there in the Texas rotation? This hit home a little harder than it for me, just because in my home league we had a secondary trading period over the weekend, and one team lost Zach Wheeler. But that happened before the trading period happened, so he could do something about it. So he made a trade for a couple starting pitchers to, you know, fill his rotation. The team who lost Eovaldi, this happened after the trading period was over. And so he couldn't do anything about it beyond, you know, put him on the IL and hopefully he can pick up somebody to stream throughout the course of the playoffs. But is there anybody in Texas that can take advantage of Eovaldi's absence?
Well, it's going to be Jacob Latz. I think he's going to get these starts and he's intriguing. He's somewhat stretched out. We have seen him make a couple of starts. He went 5 innings a little over a month ago versus Detroit, only giving up 1 earned run. Pretty nice start. He gave up a couple of runs in his most recent outing versus the Angels in 4 1/3. So I was intrigued, but I don't like the upcoming schedule. As a lefty facing Arizona this coming Tuesday, it appears Arizona top five in baseball versus lefties over the past 3 weeks as a team. So I really don't like that start. And then he lines up versus Milwaukee the following week. And for the record, I'll just get it out of the way since we're talking Rangers rotation here, Adam. I am not on Patrick Corbin this week for his two-step at Arizona. Once again, as a lefty facing a team that's been really good versus lefties recently. And then Houston with that right-handed heavy lineup for his two-step. So I'm not in on Patrick Corbin this week either. Not a great week for that Texas rotation fantasy-wise.
Let's just get that right out of the way. Yeah, I was looking at Lats. Eno and Nick were talking about him a little bit on the craft this week. Look for that episode to hit airwaves probably before our episode does, but you can watch that on YouTube as it is. But yeah, they were talking a little bit about that. Obviously, a lot of intriguing. But yeah, your point is definitely noted where we're looking at a possible schedule that has him facing Arizona in Arizona. It could line him up for a two-step the following week if he kind of sticks in that rotation, though the two-step is Milwaukee and then Mets. If he does get that, both those starts. If he doesn't, that next week looks okay. Because if he gets pushed back even further, he could get a two-step that looks like it's at Houston and then versus Miami. So if he can kind of stretch himself out through that, that'll be something that you look at, especially if you're in a head-to-head playoff matchup type of situation. You do necessarily have to start looking ahead at those particular weeks that your streamers or your pitchers could be possibly looking into. So, but for our consideration, Fab, yeah, it might be a name that other people in your league are willing to spend a little bit higher percentage of your budget on for this desperate stream. Another pitcher that we're going to be without for quite a while and probably for the remainder of the season, Mackenzie Gore. He hit the IL. This just came through today. He hits the IL with left shoulder inflammation. I see no reason why the Nationals would need to bring him back by the end of the season with this kind of an injury. Anytime you see the word shoulder, never mind inflammation, for your pitcher, you get worried. So Mason Thompson was recalled to take his place on the roster. But is there anybody on the Nationals rotation to even consider through the last couple of weeks of the season?
Fortunately, not for me. You know, at this time of year, when we're looking at these pitching opportunities, and by the way, this week, unlike a couple of previous weeks, to do a lot of what we're going to talk about in the news and notes section here, we have a lot of options for starting pitchers this week. So I'm not going this direction. Earlier in the year, when the offense was giving them a little run support, maybe because that they do face Miami for the first half of the week, but that they're just not getting run support. And, you know, Miami, as we've talked about, better offensively than we thought they might be coming into the year, been pretty good recently. And then at the Cubs, who have picked it back up again offensively as of late. So I just think there are better options, including, I will go back, as I said, we have a lot of options this week. That's why I'm not really interested in Jacob Lats, but he'll be in my waterfalls and he would be above any of these Washington pitchers. That's where I'm going with that point.
Yeah, fair enough. There's always nice little waves throughout the season where we start seeing a lot of influx of streamable options. You know, might have to hold your nose to some of them, of course, but the nice part is having options, especially at this time of year when you obviously don't have the budget to, you need to be able to have a very long waterfall bid. So it's nice Absolutely. To at least feel like you can throw a couple names at the bottom just in case. I'm moving some stuff around here on the outline because it just makes sense. Another pitcher, again, I do not expect to see for the remainder of the season, left his start with some flexor strain concerns, and he does officially hit the IL. That is Jacob Lopez of the Athletics with a left flexor strain, hit the IL on Tuesday after his Sunday start. I'm again, don't expect him to be back for the rest of the season. Easy drop this weekend for your Fab consideration. Because of what we've seen in West Sacramento and how that park has been playing, the Athletics not being a surprisingly, you know, good team as they had been maybe in the past couple seasons, you're like, oh, maybe there's an outside chance that they make a wild card spot, whatever. And that's not necessarily the case this year. Same question is Washington. It's like, is there anybody else that we're, you know, even remotely interested in to take his place in the Athletics rotation?
Yeah, I actually, he's already in the rotation, but his spot is cemented now. Luis Morales, right? We've seen a couple of starts out of him. They've been outstanding. He lines up for a two-step this week versus St. Louis and Anaheim, both on the road. Mm-hmm. So away from that minor league ballpark there in West Sacramento, I really like him this week. This cements his position. They did go with Mason Barnett today, Saturday, as we're recording, versus Kansas City. And if they have an off day Thursday, so they may not necessarily need Barnett again on Friday. And I'm not so sure it will be Barnett again later in the week. And excuse me, they're facing Texas today, not Kansas City. I was just looking at the next note in the outline. but the point remains the same. They may not need him again, but they could use another starter coming up on Friday if they do want to give everybody that extra day off. The reason I bring that up is I have zero interest in Mason Barnett. He was in the Kansas City organization. There was a little bit of excitement several years ago. I mean, and he's got an ERA at six something at AAA this year in a lot of innings. So I don't have any interest with him, even if he does line up versus the Angels next weekend.
Fair enough. Well, since apparently you just can't help yourself, you're looking ahead, we'll get right into the next note here. Noah Cameron was supposed to start Saturday's game. He got pushed out of the way, and Stephen Kolek is starting that game today as we're recording. Stephen Kolek, of course, acquired from San Diego earlier at the trade deadline for Kansas City. Does this make you worried at all about Noah Cameron's innings limits, if there is one? Do you expect him to move into more of a bullpen role, or just skip? Is this just a common skip start situation for Cameron? I guess you can mention if you actually have interest in Kolek moving forward on the season as well.
No, I think this is just giving Cameron a little of time, right? He had thrown 122 innings in 2024, and he's at 140, right? Mm-hmm. So Kansas City's still with a little bit of postseason hopes, not a lot after blowing Friday night's game. I'm not disgruntled at all about that, Adam. But sure. Anyway, they still have postseason hopes, and Noah Cameron probably would be one of their starters at postseason, even if Cole Reagans is back and performing able to go deep into games at that point with the way Seth Lugo has performed as of late since signing his extension. So yeah, I think this is just keeping those innings down. If they make the postseason, they want Noah Cameron available. So for our fantasy purposes, the rest of September, that could become an issue. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, Kansas City is first man out right now. Mm-hmm. They don't have any teams that they need to jump over in order to get to first man out situation for the American League wild card.
And but they have a series versus Seattle coming up in a couple of weeks. That could be really interesting.
That would be a big one because they are exactly three games out going into Saturday. And mm-hmm. from that final wild card spot, currently held by Seattle. Seattle's the top of, Seattle has that last spot. But that leads me into my other question that I put on here specifically for you as the Royals fan here. Cole Reagans has been on the shelf for a while. He's been progressing as quickly as you would expect based on his shoulder concerns, on his injury history in the past as well. What should I be expecting the Royals to do with Cole Reagans through September, where I worry that they might be considering, you know, pushing him, like not having to do a bunch of rehab starts if he's feeling good, and having him get right into the thick of things in order to make that push into the wild card spot? Or do you think they'll play it a little safer, let them do some rehab starts? Here's the other issue, is that minor league season is going to end soon, and there will not be opportunity to do rehab starts at the minor league level. So when do you expect Reagans to be back, if at all?
Even watching all of the Royals games, and it's brought up in every broadcast, right? There's not a lot of information, right? The most recent rehab performance that we've been told about was last Sunday, almost a week ago. And that was expressed that would be his final bullpen, that he would now face live hitters. I fully expect he's done that, but we haven't heard about it yet.
Right.
Right. I fully expect that he has faced live hitters this week. As far as rehab starts, you're exactly right. Only a couple of weeks remaining in the minor league seasons. And so we would have to get one or two. I do think, as long as they are within striking distance of that wild card, of course, Cole Reagans is going to be part of that plan. If they make the postseason, he will need a couple of major league starts. So I expect that we may see him on a rehab outing by next weekend. When we're talking next week, I think we know at least he's either already had one or is about to have a rehab start, and then we'll see him at the end of September. I actually have Cole Reagans as my wild card for this reason. And the reason he's a wild card is we're not getting much information.
Exactly.
They're not telling us much. But all of those interviews that I've been seeing, watching the broadcast, every time they talk about how good he says he's feeling, how well things are going, but we're not getting details, but everything sounds positive at the moment. I know that is a long-winded answer of I don't know, but I think we will see him for the final 2 weeks of the season.
And that's the question. Is it the final 2 weeks? Is it the final 3 weeks? Do they push him a little bit further? Because your point, that weekend or that midweek series, it's a weird series, or it's like Tuesday through Thursday against Seattle in the middle of the month is kind of a big deal. It could end up being kind of a big deal. There's also,
and they have a pretty good pitching staff themselves. So you need guys out there that can limit runs, right?
Yes. Of course. 4 games against Cleveland as well. They're a game back from Kansas City in that wild card hunt.
Texas
as well.
Jumped back up there the last few days as well.
Yes. So, but these are the matchups that they have that they can make the most ground, or they can make the most difference. The Cleveland series could go the opposite way. Like they could, you know, absolutely. That could go negative. And that is, you know, Monday the 8th. That's the week after. So I wonder how much of that consideration is being made when, hey, we're going to get you one rehab start in the first week of September and then jump you right back into Kansas City so you can at least get one of those starts against Cleveland so we can make more of an impact. We'll wait and see with bated breath. But ultimately, what I'm hearing from you, though, in your Fab Leagues, like if you haven't already, you're not dropping Reagans unless you're.
And I actually looked; not many people have. Right. He's like 87% rostered, even in 12s. Mm-hmm. So
not saying you can go out and pick him up, but if you've held on to him this long, you know, I held on to Shane McClanahan longer than I probably should have in a couple of spots. Because you just don't know. You didn't get all the information until you get that final nail in the coffin for a guy like Reagans. Unless you're really twisting your arm to drop somebody like that. And we just went over 3 guys that you're going to have a better option of dropping than Cole Reagans anyway. Well, we're talking about Cole Reagans possibly coming back before the end of the season. One starting pitcher who did make his debut already is Kyle Pradish. He made his 2025 debut. He looked just fine with his 10 strikeouts. Do you have any doubt that Pradish is just going to, you know, coast through the rest of the season every fifth day and just be an asset to those who, you know, held on to him all season long?
That is how I feel. Slight, you know, concerns. Like both runs that he gave up versus your Red Sox were home runs, slightly concerning, in spite of the 10 strikeouts and those being the only two runs he gave up. And schedule at San Diego, if they stick with the six man, then we won't see him until the following week. But if they bump somebody, and it would still be 5 days rest that he could get a two-step with 5 days rest. Otherwise, it's going to be seven because they're off that following Monday as well. They may want that for Bradish. Baltimore, they're not doing anything, right? The only thing Baltimore is doing right now is trying to make them a better team for 2026. So we may not see him. We may see 7 days off. But if he gets the two-step, it's at San Diego, at LA Dodgers. That's not great. If I'm rostering Kyle Bradish, which I am in a couple of spots, I'm starting him for that, but it's slightly concerning is all I'm bringing up. But yeah, I'm throwing him out there.
Sure. Another expected return to the majors should be coming in the next week or two, and that is John Means, expected to make his 2025 debut for Cleveland in the next couple of weeks. He did make another rehab start at AAA, where his previous one had been at High A, looked really good in the High A location, 3 2/3, no runs, but did get knocked around a little bit in his AAA start, allowing 4 runs on 3 hits. Same kind of question. I mean, first and foremost, do you think that, you know, the result of a rehab start moving into AAA pushes his rehab a little bit longer than maybe if it had been really, really positive? Or does it really not matter because of my point earlier where the AAA season is coming to an end relatively soon? Does it really matter? Cleveland has that, you know, matchup against your Royals in about a week and a half anyway. When do you expect to see John Means, and are we, you know, we see Kyle Bradish come back and succeed. We saw Shane Bieber come back and succeed. I do have similar expectations for John Means as he makes his return.
Yeah. And this is very intriguing to me because if we don't see John Means for a bit longer, I like who we're probably seen in his spot, because my guess is when we look at Cleveland's rotation and the upcoming schedule, my guess is Parker Messick is the odd man out when Meads returns. What do you think, Adam? And he's been really good, which is part of my point. And he's got a really nice two-step this week. It includes your Red Sox, but they have not been good versus lefties recently. I really like Messick this week. Tampa and Boston, both at near the bottom of the league versus lefties over the past 3 weeks as teams. So hopefully we get both of those starts, and I think we probably do. But, you know, John Means is the type of guy, and if he's going 3 innings in a minor league rehab start, regardless of the results, he's ready. They can throw him in a major league game at any point. So I'm really hoping that we see Messick for this two-step this week. And I'm afraid he might be the guy. It's really tough to see what Cleveland does here. Ciccone, Logan Allen, right? Obviously, it's Gavin Williams and Tanner Bibee will stay in the rotation. But these guys have been in the rotation longer than Messick this year. So who's going to be the guy out?
I mean, Messick seems like the obvious choice here. If it's not him, then it's Logan Allen, just because they've kind of pulled that string with him quite a bit already. Right. But they don't have an off day until the 22nd of September, Cleveland, that is. So they very well could just end up going with a six-man rotation, just adding Means to the mix, and that way, you know, get stretching out that rotation in general. You still get opportunities for two steps when you don't have any off days with a six man rotation. Only one guy will get it.
Oh, right.
But at the same time, you there's no rest for the weary with their schedule moving forward. It's kind of crazy. Plus a doubleheader toward the end of that stretch as well against Minnesota on the 20th of September. So with the limited amount of off days for the Guardians, expect nobody to lose their rotation spot at this spot at this time. Or if they do, they, you know, maybe they just get skipped and then they just get put in, you know, the next time around as well.
Right. Cause means that that rehab start where he went three innings was Tuesday, which means he could be ready to go tomorrow, Sunday, as when many people are our listeners will be listening to this. We could see him bumped into this rotation at any point now.
Man, who is, who's already slated? Do they don't have an opening. Like they have announced the starter for tomorrow, right? Now you got me looking.
Yeah, it's Tanner Bibee.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's definitely. See,
I doubt they push him back, but they could see that they could throw, and then Messick would still get his two step if Means is thrown in there on Monday. If he's not, then Messick is still lined up and has at least gotten one of those two starts, and then it's not tragic if he gets bumped. But so I think we're probably safe with Messick, but we may not get both starts that I'm hoping for.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see if, I mean, Means is not announced to have a specific rehab start scheduled at AAA, an additional one. So you're right. They could just kind of push everybody back a day if mm-hmm. necessary. But if he does, if, you know, you're watching the box scores in AAA and, you know, you see that Means got in there, then of course we can push that back to the Tampa series over the weekend, or maybe he makes his debut against your Royals at the beginning of next week. So keep an eye on Means's actual production and where that actually happens. All right. We've got a couple of actual major league debuts. We've got some bullpen news and notes. And then of course there are hitters in this league that are making adjustments as well. So we'll get to all of that after this break. All right, Kevin, we talked about some 2025 debuts, but we did see some major league debuts on Friday as well. Most notably, Jonah Tong of the New York Mets and then Peyton Toll of my Red Sox. They made their major league debuts. Funnily enough, like they were both not on the 40-man roster, so things had to happen to get them on there. Jonah Tong already announced he'll get another start for the Mets. Peyton Toll only made it to the roster because my Red Sox released Walker Buehler. They just pulled him from the rotation last week, and now he's not even on the roster. So between Tong and Toll, who do you like better to kind of, I mean, obviously Tong has that leg up here because it's already been announced he'll get another start. I expect Toll to get another start for my Red Sox, especially after his debut. You're spending money on both. You're putting both of them in all of your bids this week. Who's at the top though?
I think I'm going Toll just slightly. Of course, I think they're 1A and 1B here. Bradish is available everywhere because we hadn't seen him yet, just experience-wise. And but these guys, the matchups aren't phenomenal for any of them, is what I'm getting at. I like Toll getting Cleveland this week. Cleveland up and down, but they're not an offense I'm scared of, right? They can put some runs on the board, but I'm not scared of them. And we're looking at Tong going to at Cincinnati. So I have Toll slightly ahead, but yes, obviously both of these guys are going to be at or near the top of everyone's list this week.
Yeah, it was definitely fun to see these guys actually make their way. I didn't think we'd see either one of them. But I guess the more surprising one I honestly thought was Jonah Tong. Everybody's talking about him, but just because of the whole 40-man thing, they just brought up Nolan McLean. You know, they have Brandon Sproat out there as well as an option. And so to see Jonah Tong do not only the things he did, but also just be the option that the Mets went with and already make an announcement that he will get another start was exciting to see. So I do expect, yeah, along with Bradish being the readily available pitchers to make their debuts, we'll see all these guys as you mentioned, 1A, B, and C on pretty much everybody's waterfall bids. So whatever minimum money you have, I do expect, I mean, Bradish is the one obviously that has the guarantee as we talked about, to get, you know, the four or five starts the remaining rest of the way. I won't be surprised. I don't see an avenue, honestly, for either the Mets or the Red Sox to kick either one of these guys out until they kind of force their hand to do so. And God forbid that they actually do. Hopefully they just coast. But they're still young pitchers, and we all know that, you know, they have a certain floor attached to them. All right. I mentioned that there is, Walker Buehler, is he getting picked up anywhere? And do you care?
Possibly. And I might care because we've seen spurts. I use him in versus certain matchups and in a couple of spots on a couple of deep league teams, fairly recently. So I would be intrigued depending on where he might land. We'll know by the time our Fab runs, because to be eligible for the postseason, exactly. I don't know that he'll go pitch the season out for a non-contender to be eligible for the postseason. He would have to be on a roster by tomorrow, I believe, by Sunday. So I think we'll know before Fab runs, and I'm probably not adding him anywhere where I don't already roster him. I'm just intrigued to see where it lands. Yeah. Probably no interest that talked in circles to get there.
Yeah. It really depends on the team he ends up going with. And if it is a contender, strong possibility, he goes into a long man and he finishes out the season valuable way he could be for that team. If he gets picked up by a non-contender, maybe he fills a gap in the Texas rotation. Maybe he, you know, we talked about some guys that are, maybe he fills the gap in the Washington rotation. Yeah, he can get more stretched out, and maybe depending on the matchup that he sees, but I become less interested almost than if he was being put in a more valuable position on a contender. Bullpen issues going forth throughout the course of the week. In your daily moves leagues, you've already been able to make adjustments here, but Randy Rodriguez had been out for quite some time, struggling, and now it's been announced that multiple doctors have recommended he's going to get Tommy John surgery. No official announcement of whether or not he's accepting that diagnosis or not. It's got to be one of those things where it's like, I just don't want to believe it. You go through your, you know, seven stages of grief and all that. But we're not going to see Randy Rodriguez the rest of the year. Ryan Walker has already kind of retaking that role in San Francisco. Along that lines, we also have lost Tyler McGill. He hits the IL for Milwaukee with a right elbow sprain, this flexor. Overall, which situation are you more interested in spending what little Fab period you have, the Milwaukee closer situation or the San Francisco closer situation?
Either or. Of Milwaukee's been the better team, winning more games, so I might go Uribe slightly ahead. I don't know, are we more worried about Shelby Miller maybe snagging a save or two there in Milwaukee than we're worried about in San Francisco? But I think Milwaukee's gonna win more games. It's a 1A, 1B, and I would probably put Uribe slightly ahead, just team context. But yeah, and these are the guys, similar roster ships, they're rostered in less than half of 15 team leagues, but they are rostered in quite a few places due to they were the spec guys and great ratios, like we talk about in that category later. But yeah, these are the two, 1A and 1B. If a handful of saves can get you 5-6 points, which that can be the case in many leagues this time of year, this is where you're spending your money this week, is on one of these two guys.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious Uribe is the guy in Milwaukee, but to your point, it's 100% chance that Ryan Walker is the guy in San Francisco, where Uribe, you know, Shelby Miller could steal one or two throughout between now and the end of September. All right, so always fun to speculate on saves in general. So, you know, when we get actual, like, multiple changes where you know the guy who's getting it put into that role, kind of put your mind at ease, where it's like, all right, I can feel more comfortable spending the extra $2 on this guy that, you know, I might have available. All right. Finally, we get some hitters to talk about, Kevin. And your boy Jordan Lawler is officially back in Arizona, being recalled to the Diamondbacks roster. What kind of role do you see him playing down in the final, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the season for Arizona? Is he going to get the playing time? Like, we kind of seen this story before. Is there any chance that they send him back down after a week just for fun? What are your overall hope and desires for Jordan Lawler now that he's back in Arizona?
No, as we talked, you know, the roster's crowded here with Perdomo being the shortstop, Ketel Marte being the second baseman most days. Blaze Alexander has been the everyday third baseman for weeks now. So it's tight. But I think he's going to get his playing time. They don't make this move if he's not going to play. You don't bring a guy up on August 30th. The reason, to the point you've made a couple of times already, the minor league seasons are ending. And so Jordan Lawler needs at-bats. He's been plagued by injuries throughout his minor league career. They're going to find a way to get him in this lineup.
Yeah. The other move in Arizona that I didn't put on here, just worth mentioning, it doesn't really affect Jordan Lawler's situation, but Pavin Smith does hit the IL, freeing up first base for Tyler Locklear, who had been, you know, the odd man out in that. We talked about how both of them were going to be getting playing time. That was not the case once Pavin Smith came in. Pavin Smith started all but two games between his IL return until his new injury list addition. So Tyler Locklear should grab all the starts at first base moving forward, I would expect.
Locklear had made 16 consecutive starts at first base until Pavin Smith came off the IL, and now two consecutive since Pavin Smith has his new injury. So I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, I mean, you thought that maybe they'd be able to split some DH time as well, but that did not happen. So I grabbed both Pavin Smith and Tyler Locklear in one of my leagues 2 weeks ago. And so I'm pretty happy about that decision. Luckily I had put Pavin Smith in my lineups for all of those starts. But now I was able to flip the switch over to Locklear pretty easily. All right. So we got that at least hitter addition to the Arizona lineup. Now we have a hitter leaving a lineup. Nick Kurtz left Friday's game early with right oblique soreness. No official word on if he's gonna, you know, need an IL stint or how much time he might miss, but expecting that he'll at least miss maybe the weekend. Is there anything, any kind of movement with the Athletics that you'd be interested in? We always talk about how we don't like our pitchers going into Sacramento. I'm a big fan of the hitters that are playing out there as well. So any kind of expectation on the Athletics lineup changing around now that Nick Kurtz could be, you know, out for at least a little bit?
I'm going to keep a close eye on this over the weekend. We haven't got any really detailed news, but it kind of sounds like they're downplaying this a little bit, and it's considered fairly minor, and this may only be a day or two. I am double checking really quick to see if their lineup is out for Saturday. I doubt it, because no, they don't play until 10 o'clock Eastern tonight. But it sounds like they're downplaying it a little bit. But if we don't see him over the weekend, Tyler Soderstrom is going to get some of these starts at first base, which is going to free up an outfield spot for possibly JJ Bleday, who we were excited about a couple of weeks ago. Didn't really work out as we were hoping. I might be going back to that well. However, if this does end up being, you know, in any time at all, a minimum IL stint, even for Nick Kurtz, might mean a little more playing time for JJ Bleday in that ballpark, as you mentioned.
Carlos Cortez was the one that replaced the Kurtz other. That he came in. I'm also looking, I mean, Kurtz has been leading off for the last 2 weeks for the Athletics as well. And so wondering what kind of move at the top of the lineup gets made in the very few times he did not start. Shaylen Clears just moved up one spot to the leadoff spot. Cortez actually, you know, led off a couple weeks ago in that other, in the last time Kurtz wasn't in there. So not a big sample size to figure out exactly what is going to happen. So just keep an eye on who ends up leading off today, assuming Kurtz is not at least in today's Saturday's lineup, Saturday night, as you mentioned. All right, we got another injury of a player leaving their lineup, and we got a couple of those actually, and we'll get to those after this next break. All right, Xander Bogaerts hits the IL for San Diego with a non-displaced fracture of his foot this time. So it's not his shoulder, not his arm or anything. He's gotten that in the past. Now it's his foot. I mean, any kind of fracture in the IL, I don't expect Bogaerts to come back in the next a couple weeks, if not the rest of the season. I haven't seen an official announcement on how long he will be out, but I'm not using Bogaerts for the remainder of the season, especially if I have to make an active lineup throughout the course of I'm not holding on to him is what I'm saying. Overall though, with Bogaerts being missing at least a little bit, what expectations are you having with the San Diego lineup and infield? And are you interested in any of those moves?
I think this will be a one for one. I think because of his defense and his solid on-base skills that we're going to see Jose Iglesias the rest of the way for San Diego here. And he's not exciting, but in this lineup, he can pile up some runs and RBI with a good batting average. He's not going to help you in home runs. He's not going to help you in stolen bases. You might get one or two in those categories, but as a stabilizer that can accumulate runs and RBI in this lineup, I think Jose Iglesias probably plays every day. Unless I don't know of anybody that I would be interested in that they may call up, but with a veteran like Iglesias, you have him on your roster for this reason. Yeah, he's a utility guy. We move him around, give guys days off here and there. He hadn't played for six straight games, but now he's been in the lineup two consecutive, and I expect to see it the rest of the way.
Yeah, sure. Whether we care about it from a fantasy perspective, you know, is kind of a different story. To be honest, he's not exciting, but honestly, neither was Xander Bogaerts through most of this.
Xander was actually stealing bases this year, though. He was. I bet he's higher in the player rater than you would expect.
Just because of that. I mean, because of the stolen bases.
And is it batting average? And sure. Yeah.
I mean, he was still batting fourth or fifth pretty much all season as well in a decently offensive lineup. All right. I digress then. Another shortstop we will probably miss for the rest of the season. Corey Seager had an appendectomy. I'm sure I said that wrong. But the Rangers have not ruled out him coming back before the end of the regular season. But if you have to, you're dropping Seager, I'm assuming, at this point. Dylan Moore, your boy Dylan Moore, no longer in Seattle, in Texas, gets the call up to replace him on the roster. Is this a one for one? Or do you expect out of the shortstop position in Texas for the remainder of the regular season?
No, we saw Ezekiel Duran on Friday versus a lefty, and I think that will remain the case. Duran had been playing first base versus lefties, and that's where Dylan Moore played on Friday. However, Texas doesn't face a left-handed starting pitcher this coming week. I don't think we'll see Dylan Moore. I don't think we'll see Ezekiel Duran. I think we'll see quite a bit of Josh Smith, who we have seen off and on throughout the season, has been playing some second base. Things are just going to get shuffled around here. We'll get a little more Duran and... you know, Jake Berger coming back sometime in the near future. He'd been sitting versus righties, though, at times. This Texas lineup is fascinating. You have guys like Josh Smith that will play versus maybe 1 in 10 lefties they face. You got Jock Peterson, you don't allow him to sniff a lefty, right? And they faced a lot of lefties as of late. So looking at their lineup, it looks like there's a lot of moving parts. But this coming week when they're facing all right-handed starting pitchers. I think we see this stabilize, and it's going to be Josh Smith probably getting those starts at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Smith is the one that filled the gap when Seager was on the IL earlier in the season, pretty much every single day. And he's really held on to that top of the lineup spot, even after the fact. Over the last 3 weeks, he's been leading off against righties, every righty that comes along. And to your point, they have had a lot of lefty starters. So Josh Smith has been missing from that side of the platoon in those starts. But if you're not facing lefties, then I would expect Josh Smith to be in there pretty much every day.
Yeah, they don't have the luxury of sitting in versus lefties anymore, because remember, Marcus Semien hit the IL just about a week ago. So Josh Smith is going to be forced into that time.
Yeah, I mean, with Seager and Semien both out, sure.
Can help us with counting stats, but as far as batting average goes, do we want him getting those at-bats?
We said that with Dylan Moore all the time as well. It's like, you got to know where you're at, right? If you're trying to stabilize average at the cost of your counting stats versus the other way around, Josh Smith may or may not be your best option out there.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we got two guys placed on outright waivers. And really, I just want to know from you whether or not which one of them is most likely to get picked up and actually, get picked up in a position that you're going to care about. And that was Isaiah Kiner-Falefel got placed on waivers by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I feel like we've heard this story too before, where, IKF had a part of his contract where he'd get a bonus, and then they cut him just before the bonus. This one's a little bit further along. I think it was like he was like 81 plate appearances away from his bonus. He would literally have to get 4 or 5 plate appearances throughout the rest of September to hit that, which is still possible. And then the other one was Carlos Santana was placed on waivers by the Guardians. Will either one of these guys get picked up and or not? I mean, if they don't get picked up, they can stay on their team's roster and they'll just play out the rest of the season? Question mark.
Yeah, I think that's the case with either guy. And in deep leagues, both of these guys have been useful. I was caught off guard by the IKF drop and stuck. I did not have a replaced second baseman for him in a deeper league this week for my weekend lineup. So I'm sitting there with him in my lineup. So obviously I'm interested in him. If he finds a starting position where he's going to get the playing time. And the same would be the case for Carlos Santana. He's not a 30 home run hitter these days, but on an everyday plate appearance pace, he's still a 20 to 25 home run hitter, and we've seen him have value this season for our fantasy teams at times. So yeah, either one of these guys, I'm probably not interested in rostering either one unless I know their landing spot and role. So I will take that into consideration leading up till Sunday night. And if I'm not interested this week, I may be next week. Although, with them having to be on a roster prior to Monday to be postseason eligible, then maybe they do end the season as free agents, or as you mentioned, on their current rosters of the teams that did DFA them. So, if they are in a lineup, I'm interested in these guys, but it's a wait and see.
To be fair, IKF is in the lineup today. He's nice. Batting ninth, starting at third base for the Pirates. This could totally be a situation where he gets claimed mid game and they have to pull him off out of the lineup. If somebody claims him before the game ends,
was it Randall Grichuk? I think it was Randall Grichuk a couple of years ago when the Angels did this and he ended up not getting picked up and ended on the roster and had an amazing September.
Yes, it was absolutely.
So that's what we're hoping for here.
It's just a very awkward situation until September 1st passes, right? It's like, I guess I still work here. I'm not sure. Hi guys. All right. I guess I'll just get to work.
You didn't want me on the team yesterday and today I'm leading off. Great.
Yeah, right. hey, at least I'll get my at-bat. But you notice ICAF is at the bottom of the lineup, so less likely Hoot.
He had been recently anyway, but yeah, at times we've seen him near the top this season.
All right. Well, we'll see if either one. I mean, Santana was placed on waivers earlier in the week, so he's had a couple of days to get picked up, and he still hasn't been. So, you know, teams could be waiting until the last possible second to make that claim. Like you said, as long as it happens before Monday, before the first, and they're on that roster, they can be playoff eligible. All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for the news and notes that is worth talking about regarding FAB. But of course, lots of other stuff has been happening. And if you're not continuing to listen to the First Pitch podcast, what are you doing? Jake Crumpler and Trevor Huth, they have you covered, and they break down all the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate throughout the rest of the season to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. And during the week, Nick Pollock has you covered with the Plus Pitch podcasts. Check those out. They're very easily digestible. Upwards of 20 minutes, maybe, you know, even any shorter than that, to get as much information as you need on your early morning commute, during, you know, if you're mowing the lawn, whatever you're doing in the early part of the day, every single day to keep you up to date. All right, Kevin, we'll get into our actual FAB recommendations. We're going to do that after this quick break. All right, Kevin, we've got a little bit of money left. We've still got to keep an active roster through the final few weeks of the season. And if we are fighting and scraping our way to the top of our home run and RBI categories, who might be available out there in the power categories that you're, you know, going to at least add to your waterfall bids?
Yeah, a couple of guys due to schedules this week that we will probably see in their lineups on a daily basis. And with availability here, Rowdy Tellez in Texas, since he was acquired at the All-Star break, he's been with the Rangers since we came back for the second half. He only has 76 plate appearances. He doesn't play versus lefties, and we just talked about Texas has faced a lot of lefties recently, but none this upcoming week. 6 out of 6 right-handed starting pitchers on their schedule. He's hitting almost 270, 269 as a Texas Ranger. 4 home runs, 13 RBI. He's got a 131 WRC plus. We know this is what he does versus right-handed hitters, right-handed pitching, excuse me, in streaks, of course. He can be streaky and go into a slump, even facing these righties. But versus righties, he's a full season 30 home run, 100 RBI guy. And he's only 2% rostered even in 15 team main events right now. So I that number is going to skyrocket with the schedule the Rangers have this week. Mike, I was concerned a bit about Jake Berger's return. He has began hitting. And if he would come back at some point this week, I'm not as concerned about that as I was when I looked a little deeper. He was starting to sit versus righties even prior to the injury in between his 2 IL stints. Not every day, but he was sitting versus some righties. So I think Rowdy Tellez gets these at bats. And then similarly, I'm not as high on him, but he has actually been performing pretty well recently, and he's in the lineup every day versus righties. And that is Yoán Moncada. So a couple corner infielders for my power this week is where I'm looking. Moncada is pretty heavily rostered in 15s, over 60%, but only 5% in 12s. And he could be viable this week with all that right-handed pitching.
Mm-hmm. As I'm scrolling through the PL projections, because of course it's lovely to be able to do that when we record on a Saturday for the next week, you know, very easily just go through and just do the projections for RBIs, for home runs. And an interesting name that I honestly was not on my radar whatsoever, so I actually don't know really much about him, maybe you do, is Nico Cavadas, first baseman for the Angels, who got the call up about 2 weeks ago. You know, he had been called up before that as well, but didn't get any playing time. Has been playing first base sporadically over the last week and a half. Was in the lineup, started at first base, batted eighth for the Angels on Friday. I don't see a lineup for them yet either for today's game, but definitely has the power potential if given the playing time. The question I have is whether or not the Angels will give that playing time. And playing time is always the thing that is the most difficult part to project. PLBot has him projected at about 28 and a half plate appearances throughout next week with playing all seven games. So they do, you know, we'll get to that opportunity later. So if he can play a majority of those games for the Angels, whether he's starting or pinch hitting, you know, he has the power potential to, you know, make a difference, at least batting, even batting eighth in that lineup or seventh or eighth in that lineup, could be an option there in the RBI category.
That's actually a great option, Adam, that I had forgotten about, because he is going to get that playing time. He's been the first baseman four out of five games since Nolan Schanuel went on the IL. So he's going to get the at-bats this week, I believe. I agree with PLBot.
There we go. All right. Well, we need some speed to go along with the power, and give me some time to filter out the PLBot projections here, Kevin. Who do you have that's available out there to grab some stolen bases or score some runs?
Yeah, I have a couple of guys pretty heavily rostered in 15s, but widely available in 12s. Andrés Giménez, we've talked about him in probably every one of our offensive categories at some point this season. When healthy and performing well, we've seen him be close to 20 home run guy. We've seen him be a 30 stolen base guy multiple occasions. He's only 40% rostered in 12s and is performing like that 15 to 20 home run, 30 stolen base guy that we expected. It's a small sample. He's only been back for a few games, but he already has two home runs, two stolen bases since his return, and looking like the Andrés Giménez that we drafted, or at least if you're like me, you drafted in several spots this season, and the first half of this first half plus of the season, pretty disappointing. But we're seeing the Andrés Giménez that we were after during draft season currently. I like him this week. Still picking on Miami. We have Dalen Lyle with Washington. He's 80% rostered in 15s, but only 8% in 12s. Five out of six games this week versus right-handed pitching, including three games versus Miami, all three of them versus righties. So I expect to see Dalen Lyle in that lineup. He only has, I think, it's single digits. I think like seven or eight stolen bases on the season. Mm-hmm. But it's that Miami. I'm targeting Miami, and we know Washington will turn him loose.
Yeah, there you go. You got to, especially when you're playing these like streaming matchups, you can do that, of course, with stolen bases. You guys got to play the matchups correctly.
And he's got a nice batting average as well. This isn't a guy we're throwing out there. This isn't Tyler Tolbert, right?
Right. So PLBot's got another interesting name. Of course, apparently PLBot just loves the Angels in general, looking nice at opportunity here. Bryce Teodosio, sure, I said that not wrong, Bryce. I'm so sorry. He's been starting center field for the Angels for the last few weeks at this point. Batting at the bottom of the lineup, sure, but he's got plenty of speed. He did steal a base last week as well. He is facing Houston this weekend, which will carry over to Monday. So we talked about Houston being one of those targets as well. So you'll get at least one start against Houston, but they do have the seven game stretch, as I mentioned earlier. So even at the bottom of the lineup, plenty of opportunity as long as he can get on base. Hasn't really collected a whole bunch of hits in his time period in starting in center field. But if he can get on base and take advantage of the opportunity, Bryce Teodosio can, you know, take advantage. He can be an asset there. And, you know, at least you're getting a warm body who is playing every single day that you can trust will be in your lineup throughout the rest of the week. It's weird to just kind of pick on the Angels for all of these, but you know, sometimes fun things come in, you know, from different locations.
And it means availability.
And that's really what it comes down to is the availability. As I kind of sort this through runs, it's a lot harder. I've got to scroll down a lot further on this list of expected guys to score some runs until I finally, let's see, I'm having a hard time. It's like everybody, it's like these are all names that obviously are rostered. It's just a matter of kind of finding the one that pops out. They're like, hey, I actually don't know that name. I wonder if they're available. More than likely they are. Runs are going to be driven by, you know, guys at the top of the lineup. They've been at the top of the lineup forever. You know, Josh Smith might be that option just because he'll be at the top of the lineup all week long for those places that he is still available out there. We talked about him earlier, so we don't really need to get into that. Josh Smith probably not stealing a bunch of bases, but if he is at the top of the lineup all week long because they're facing a bunch of righties and they're going to have to force him into the lineup against lefties, as you mentioned earlier, could be the option that you want to look to see his availability as well. All right. Well, we talked about all these guys having opportunity, especially on the Angels. Angels are one of very few teams that have a 7-game work week ahead of them. The other teams include Tampa Bay, the White Sox, Cleveland, Minnesota, Houston, and of course the Angels themselves. Nobody has a 5-game work week, but it is maybe worth mentioning that there are a couple of teams who have a weird Tuesday off day instead of a Monday off day for those in your daily moves leagues and heading into your playoffs. Philadelphia is off on Tuesday. Milwaukee is off on Tuesday. And so just keep an eye on that, especially in your daily moves leagues, if you want to make sure you have a full lineup for the first week of your playoffs. Colorado will be home all week, hosting San Francisco for 3 and San Diego for the other 3. Cincinnati also home all week. Toronto will be heading to Great American Small Park for the first 3. The Mets will be heading there for the weekend series. Tampa Bay also hosting. So all these hitter-friendly parks getting a lot of action throughout the course of the week, with Seattle heading to Tampa for 3 and then Cleveland heading to Tampa for 4. And then the one stadium that will be left vacant all week long is the West Sacramento Stadium for the Athletics. They will be on the road as they head to St. Louis and to Anaheim for their 2-3-game sets. So with all that in mind, Kevin, and anything else, who is taking advantage of the opportunity ahead that you'd be interested in adding to your teams?
Yeah, we didn't talk about it during the news and notes section, but Connor Norby has returned for Miami, and he's been out long enough that he's available. 21% rostered in the main event, 14% in online championships. So he's got a lot of availability in both 15s and 12s in the lineup versus a lefty here on Saturday as we're recording. Was in the lineup on this first game back Friday versus a righty. That's what I expect to see. They need Connor Norby to get these at-bats the final month of the season he's missed quite a bit of time this year. And so we'll see him the rest of the way. I firmly believe I really wanted to. And in fact, I had him typed in, Adam. I know you're going to laugh when I say this. I really thought Houston faces 4 left-handed starting pitchers this week. At first glance, that means it's a Ramon Urias week. However, with the return of Jordan Alvarez, Houston doesn't have anywhere to put Jose Altuve except second base. And that's where Urias had been playing versus lefties.
Right.
And that's what we saw on Friday night. So now I'm not so keen on that. I'm sure he probably gets a couple of those starts, but I doubt he gets all 4 of them now. So unfortunately, I couldn't sneak him in there. But Connor Norby, a lot of availability.
Is Jordan Alvarez actually going to come back?
We've seen him for 3 games already.
Yeah.
it's hard to believe, but he's played 3 games at him.
right. Let's keep the train rolling. He's not here to tell me otherwise, but I will shout out to Uncle Ted, who mentioned Anthony Santander is getting close to starting a rehab start as well. So look at that option in the coming days. He may not need a very long in. We kept talking about it a bunch. There's not going to be a lot of opportunity for rehab starts in the minor leagues moving forward. So he very well could make his return very, very soon to to the Toronto lineup, even if he's not at 100%. All right. So we've got a lot of hitters, a lot of opportunity to consider there. Well, we got to get some pitchers on our rosters as well. We're going to do that right after this break. All right, Kevin, jump right into it. Wins and strikeouts are volume categories. We talked about a lot of these guys already in the news section, but we've got to keep a nice long waterfall bid, especially in the pitcher's situation, because you're not going to get you're not going to have enough money to get your top guy in most scenarios. So give me a long list of options here for consideration.
Yeah, we talked about most of these guys, but I'll just briefly mention them. We mentioned that there's probably a top three in Kyle Bradish, Peyton Toll, and Jonah Tong, right? All three of those guys with 100% availability for the most part. In most leagues, they're out there. Ian Seymour has been amazing in his limited time so far as a starter this season, and he gets Cleveland. Cleveland is exponentially worse versus left-handed pitching over the last 3 weeks than the 29th team versus left-handed pitching. They have been horrendous. They have not been able to touch a left-handed starter. So Ian Seymour is a great start this week. He's available in half of 15s. And over 90% of 12s. I like him a lot. I mentioned Parker Messick earlier, getting at Boston, at Tampa, both of them bottom five or six in the league versus lefties. Love them. Luis Morales, we talked about him earlier, getting at St. Louis, at the Angels. Christian Javier made his return, has six no-hit innings for Houston. He's available in 40% of 12-team leagues. He does have the Yankees this week, but we saw a very nice performance out of him coming back. Tyler Anderson, anytime Kansas City is facing a left-handed pitcher, I'm going to be interested. They have scored some runs in a game or two versus lefties, but overall, Kansas City still horrendous versus lefties on the season and as of late. So I like Tyler Anderson there as well. I think they're with there being a handful of guys with nearly universal availability, this is only, you know, six, seven guys here. But, you know, with like Tyler Anderson, and I don't think a lot of people are going to be on Tyler Anderson. He's 72% rostered in the main event, and I get that. But I don't think a lot of people are looking at him to add this week. And Kansas City has just been awful versus lefties. So he's a great fallback option to some of the guys that we know will be more popular this week.
Mm-hmm. Again, the PL bot suggesting at the Angels once again, only because he's expected to get called back up. Caden Dana for the Angels should be starting on Tuesday, which would, again, with the Angels schedule, should get him two starts next week against your Royals and against the Athletics away from Sacramento. So, you know, any interest in rolling the dice on Caden Dana with the matchups and the fact that you're getting that kind of volume?
I looked at him and
you did not include him. So
I looked at him for the reason pretty decent matchups. Right. Plus a two step this time of year. If you're chasing wins, it almost doesn't matter about matchups. I'm not quite there yet. In most leagues, there may be a league or two where the only thing, your only chance is to gain in wins. So maybe you're making a move like this. And it's not, I don't mind a 5.93 ERA in 82 innings at AAA, that does not automatically toss him out for me. I don't know what ballparks he was pitching in. So, but when I look at his 10.5% K minus walk rate at AAA, I'm really not interested. So that along with that inflated ERA, I'm afraid we get more damage than good here.
Yeah. I mean, the last couple starts, mostly have been fine, but his last start on the 28th, where he just went three innings, let up five earned runs, and he only walked one, but only struck out two. But the start before that, he did strike out 13 over seven innings. So yeah, it can go either way. But we all know the kind of jump back into the majors, it usually sways one way and not the other way. So yeah, roll the dice if you have to, but just, I guess, more of a note as a reminder, even though he's listed as being in the minors right now, Cade Dana is expected to get a two start next week. So desperate streams call for desperate measures, right? All right. Ratios on top of that, it needs to be of the utmost importance, especially in the final few weeks, that you're just trying to, if nothing else, stabilize everything and not let anybody catch up to you. ERA, WHIP, who are you targeting here that you think could put up enough innings to make a difference?
That's the key here. We're to the point now, we're not affecting our ratios a whole lot in one and two inning outings, but we still don't want to throw starters out there that we don't want in our lineup, right? These guys are still valuable. They're almost like placeholders at this point. But if you're really trying to still improve in ratios a little bit, Aaron Ashby typically gets more than an inning. You know, until Friday, when he gave up two earned runs in an inning, and I took that into account. I'm still, that doesn't faze me one bit. I think he's still going to be a high leverage multi-inning guy. You know, his previous four outings were all at least five outs. So that's what I'm looking with Aaron Ashby here with his nice ratios for us, 2.32 ERA on the season, even including the two runs he gave up on Friday in only 50 innings pitched. So that's a pretty drastic increase to a 2.32. So Aaron Ashby, a favorite for many at Pitcher List over the years, when we thought he might be the next big thing, starter, yeah, in Milwaukee. But I love the fact that there's a chance to bring him up here, and always giving Rick Graham a shout out. He jumped him up about six spots on his holds list. So I did go to the list that I've been touting all season as where I look for my ratios guys.
Yeah. I mean, just guys that are put into the high leverage situations, they don't have to be a closer. That seventh, that eighth inning tie ball game, they're going to be used a lot more, and they're going to be trusted not only to go a little bit longer, maybe an inning and a third, whatever, but they're being put in that situation because they're trusted to keep their major league team's ERA down. And so they can do a little bit more for you in those situations as well. They're not just taking garbage time. All right. But we do need to worry about relievers at the end of ball games. We talked about two obvious names that will be at the high point of your waterfall bids for saves, if you're looking for them, with Abner Uribe and Ryan Walker, where available. Anybody, any other situations, or if you want to elaborate on why, you know, which one you would pick over the other one, there's still some situations out there that are murky at best. The one that kind of stood out to me recently was Fauché over in Miami. Seems to have a very strong hold, if whatever reason your league hasn't been speculating in that situation because Miami's bad, and they're not giving you the save opportunities. You know, again, if you're desperate times come for different measures, go ahead and make sure you're targeting that situation. But Kevin, anybody else in the saves category worth kind of targeting and talking about?
Not for me. I mean, there's still some shaky situations worth specking on out there. I think we covered it with Uribe and Walker. And then the one I was going to bring up was that Calvin Fauché, two saves this week. It had been kind of shaky. There'd been some, you know, we'd seen Henriquez and Phillips in that ninth inning role in Miami from time to time. It does appear Fauché does have it back. So getting both opportunities this week, not used in any other situations. Henriquez getting the hold in both of those games as well. So it really appears them all being righties, I think it's Fauché again in the ninth, and so he would be my backup plan to Uribe and Walker. Yes.
Yeah, it's tough because all the areas that are worth speculating on are just on bad teams and teams that,
right,
whether or not they're even going to give you any opportunities. I mean, Fauché is nice because he gave you two in a week and on a team that opportunities aren't going to come around every single week.
They get Washington the first half of the week. So you're hoping you're getting an opportunity or two early in the week because it's Philadelphia over the weekend.
Yeah, as long as... Well, I'm sure there's been better research than me just speculating on it, but like, I almost worry about the matchups against bad teams more because you could win by more than the save opportunity could allow for. Right. And if you're going to win a game against a better team, it's probably going to be a lot closer. I don't know. Again, there's obviously better research out there than me just spitballing those ideas off the top of my head. I wonder about the Baltimore situation as well. Keegan Aiken did blow a save, got a loss earlier in the week as well. Hasn't had a save since Sunday. Again, not a lot. Nobody else has gotten a save opportunity either, though, in that stretch for Baltimore. But Yennier Cano did do it in the past. He is the righty. There's opportunity there for him to kind of get some options from Baltimore down the stretch as well. So I don't know. Keep an eye on that. Again, desperate times come for desperate measures. All right, Kevin, let's talk about your wild card. You already said what it was earlier on. So if you've been listening all episode, you know what it is. But talk to me about Cole Reagans and the wild card situation that he encompasses.
Yeah, he was held in most leagues, so it's a continue to hold, but. A little bit of availability. I think it's 80 some percent in both 15s and 12s when I looked. Maybe worth a spec here. Like I said, not a lot of information other than he feels good and things are going well. And it was last weekend when they said he's done with bullpens and begin facing live hitters. Mm-hmm. So they have also said they are optimistic we will see him prior to the end of the season. I feel that is as long as Kansas City is within striking distance of this wild card, then that will be a little sooner rather than later. You brought up the great point. He won't have minor league options for rehabs. Of course, you can always go to the complex and throw versus live hitters, but I think they'll want to get him into major league games versus major league hitters prior to that possible postseason. If they're eliminated, yeah, we're still going to see. I don't think they'll pull him back, but we might see an inning less each outing. They definitely won't push him at that point. Not that they're going to push him, but you know what I mean. That they pull back just a little bit. This time of year, right? There's not many more. Of course, the rosters expand on Monday, so we can see minor leaguers coming up after the 31st. However, they're not postseason eligible. So sure. the teams that are not in postseason contention that may have a player or two come up, and they'll probably be surprises. It's usually not the players that we expect, right? We'll see a player or two on some of these teams on Monday that next week we may be very interested in that right now just will shock us when we see it on Monday. So that's going to be really interesting. But for the most part, the teams that may want to use these guys for the postseason, we have to see him this weekend, and we've seen most of that because they won't reach the at-bat limit. We talked about that last week. We've seen most of those guys, but keep a close eye on Monday. Jot them down in your notebook to look at over the weekend to revisit to see what kind of playing time they've gotten for the week.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the perfect opportunity to throw this in here. Uncle Ted threw out a great name to consider. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely a wild card because he is readily available, 19% rostered in the main event. And then is Ryan Weathers, who has a rehab start scheduled for literally like right now on the Saturday as we're recording. So we'll see how that goes. And this goes into the same conversation that we were having about John Means and the guys that are making their way back from injury at this time. If he were to have a very successful rehab stint, again, with the limited opportunities of rehab stints in the minors, do you expect Ryan Weathers to make his next start after this in Miami? It would line up to be a matchup against Philadelphia, if that were to be the case, next weekend. If he does another rehab start, he could line up to get a start against the Nationals and or the Tigers the following week. How much interest should you have in adding Ryan Weathers to your waterfall bids, along with, you know, because you can't spec on John Means because he hasn't made his debut yet. Ryan Weathers is an interesting situation because you can. He'll be available pretty much everywhere. Overall thoughts on Ryan Weathers in, you know, expecting him to come back to Miami in short order?
Yeah, I probably expect him to make another rehab start while he still can. Mm-hmm. And then as you brought up, that could make the matchups more appealing. But yeah, I think we get two or three starts out of him. So now we're talking in our leagues where we have room, right? At this point, we can always, we're kind of moving into the end of the show here as well, Adam. We're at the point in the season where, yes, everything we talk about can help us, and our teams would be better if we did it every single day, every single week, every scoring period, every lineup setting all season long. Mm-hmm. We start focusing on things more when we have more information at this point in the season. We know where we stand and we know what we need, so we can start making these, looking more in depth in the areas where we need our help. And we're to the point now where there, the reason I said all that is because, yes, we do this all year long, but we should be doing something between now and Sunday evening in our Fab leagues, where Fab runs on Sunday night. We should be doing something that makes our team better next week. Maybe that is a Ryan Weathers that we're not going to be able to use for a couple of weeks because we're set. We have a nice lineup. We have healthy guys. We love our matchups. We have coverage for the weekend if anybody gets injured during the week. And I still have one other spot where I don't want this guy. I'm not going to use him the rest of the season. Those leagues, then absolutely, a guy like Ryan Weathers that makes these decisions easier for you next weekend because you've already made that move. So I think that absolutely a guy like Ryan Weathers, but it probably limited for some players, depending on the needs and if they need that roster spot in their leagues for this week, because I don't think we see him this week. I don't think we see him versus Philadelphia.
Sure. I mean, that's great because, to Uncle Ted's point, this can keep the bidding down since he doesn't have a start for next week. He's not going to have the little baseball icon next to any of those starts as people are scrolling through all of their options on the free agent, on the waiver wire as well. So, you know, sneak him in. Get, if you have the flexibility, Ryan Weathers is a sneaky little ad. And worst case scenario, you get him for the cheap and he gets pushed back even further, or, you know, some, he has a setback, fine. I mean, maybe you have a little bit, you know, you spend an extra or a little less money from your Fab that you can then use elsewhere as well. Because if he does make the announcement that he is back and everything's good, to Uncle Ted's point, he will cost a lot more next week for sure, where he's still available. All right, Kevin. Well, anything else that you want to add? Because that was a nice, you did a really good segue there. And but I'm going to keep the door open in case there's anything else you want to add to the final notes here of the episode.
Yeah, just to expand on that a little bit. And I think I'm not sure if it was Uncle Ted, but somebody in the chat pushed back on this a little bit last week. This at this point in the season, this includes looking at my opponent's rosters and trying to determine what I think they're going to do as well, especially same situation where I have room for a Ryan Weathers, but I don't need saves. I'm good. I'm holding on, and the guy behind me can make a big jump in saves. I'm bidding on your eBay and Ryan Walker this week, even if they won't be in my lineup. right? I am looking at my opponents. I know it's too much to do that all year long, and we can make mistakes and it ends up biting us because our opponent doesn't do what we think they're going to do. Sure. But a situation like that, when you're looking at category standings, absolutely. If I'm holding on, I am looking at what my opponents have going on as well.
Yeah, excellent, excellent advice there. But with all of that and everything else, that is going to do it for episode 229 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.